Please welcome to the show our next guest. You're listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G. I'm Mike Finkelstein, and with me in the booth, instead of my normal co-hosts, is Will Bloodworth. We are doing a special interview session here for Asteroid G, and I want to thank you, Will, for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Great to be here. Thank you. How the hell are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It was interesting arranging the podcast with you for today, since you're, what, 3 hours behind me?
Roughly. Yeah, it's like quarter to eight here, which means it's middle of damn night for you.
Well, yeah, but, you know, quarantine and everything, I'm, like, up way later than I ever should be at this point.
Right.
So, that is actually, we can get to, like, Final Fantasy and whatever else you want to talk about, since I know you from the Final Fantasy Randomizer community, but
right.
I'm actually more intrigued right now because you do food delivery through one of the apps, and you can order if you want or not, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually kind of curious how the quarantine has affected you at this point.
Well, I do four apps. I haven't done all four of them at the same time in a while, just because things have been kind of eh.
Yeah,
but I'm working in a limited capacity. Like I do what's called cherry picking. So if a good order comes in, I'll leave. I'll take it. If it's not something worth leaving the house for, worth risking my life over, I don't bother.
Hmm.
But there's orders out there. It's not like the volume isn't as high as it used to be. But I think there's a larger contingent of big orders.
Hmm.
So that's nice. You have people who are generous and understand what we're going through, and we have other people who, for all intents and purposes, don't care. They just want what they want. And that's, it just, I don't know. I don't get the mentality, but.
Yeah. So that's, I honestly, you're the first person I've met that does just that exclusively as their job. How did you end up deciding that was what you were going to do?
I've done sales for the vast, vast majority of my professional life. I've been in tech sales. I've been a call center guy. I've been on the phone selling. I've managed people selling. I've actually built a call center once.
Wow.
Hired for it and so forth. And I know it inside and out, but it's dreadfully, dreadfully draining. And it's oftentimes soulless work.
Mm-hmm.
I got tired of it. I got a real estate license. I did that for about a year commercially and decided that really wasn't for me either. And I needed to make ends meet. So I started doing, I started working on a gig app called Jive, which it's JYVE.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where you go around from grocery store to grocery store stocking the shelf. So you break down a pallet and you stock the shelves and you get paid for the whole day, like whatever the pay is for that, it's agreed upon, you accept the job, you go do the job the next day, and then lather, rinse, repeat. And I was like, okay, I've got psoriatic arthritis. My joints are not loving them, so I need to do something else. I looked into DoorDash, got into that. Wasn't making a ton of money with it, but I was making enough and more than I was making on Jive. And then I saw Grubhub was looking for drivers, so I signed on with them. And tried to do both at the same time. Noticed I was making a lot more money on Grubhub. And then just started working with them exclusively.
Mm.
Bounced around all these other apps. I do Uber Eats. I do Caviar, which DoorDash now owns. And now, effectively, whatever app I want to be on at any given time, I just flip it on and I'm good to go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way to handle that. I mean, I've heard, I read stories online about the horrors of working for any one particular company.
Right.
Yeah, the tip mm-hmm. sharing or scamming or whatever and all the bullshit mm-hmm. that goes along with that.
Yes.
Yeah. So in your experience, that definitely does happen.
Yeah. What happened, the biggest perpetuator of that was DoorDash. What they were doing was they had a guarantee per trip. In my market, it was $6.50. What the customers did not know is when they were tipping you, they were supplementing that guarantee against DoorDash's dollar guarantee. So anything $5.50 or below effectively was coming out of the customer's pocket to pay our guarantee. Anything above and beyond that we got. But yeah, DoorDash was just basically pocketing the customer's tips without the customer knowing that. We figured it out. And there was a big stink, and then they changed the policy, and now the minimum is $2, $3, depending on your market,
mm-hmm.
and we get everything above and beyond that. But they don't show us what the tip amount is until after we've done the delivery. So we got to play guessing games with the order, the restaurant, if we know what the customer is. We have to be careful. Grubhub's the exact opposite. It's all up front.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So that's one of those instances where you're sitting there going, huh, informative. Okay, time to start taking this one over that one then.
Yes. Yeah. They'll have their pluses and minuses, and it's really, you have to learn the market, you have to learn the apps, you have to learn, how to make them work for you, not vice versa. Because otherwise you're gonna go broke.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit that I've used DoorDash for probably over a year now, off and on, and it's because I like their interface, and the Grubhub one didn't really thrill me. But at the same time, knowing that Grubhub is much better about treating their customers, or not their customers, their servers, essentially, their servers, right, that's much more important to me.
Right. That's entirely true.
I mean, I worked as a server at a steakhouse for years. I understand, when you have good service, you actually want to compliment that and tip them properly and everything. That is, I don't know if Grubhub's like this, but that is one issue I've always had with DoorDash, which is the fact that you have to tip ahead of time. So
yeah, same thing with Grubhub. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if the server sucks, if they're late or if they're just rude when they come up to the door, you don't you aren't able to reflect that in the tip.
No, and with different apps like Caviar and Uber Eats, you can actually change it after the delivery. It doesn't happen often, but if they really do a crap job, then you can lower the tip. If they did a better job than expected, you can bump it up. But it's a rare occurrence.
Yeah, well, I guess there's also that thing where if you made it available to everyone, then some people would abuse it, lure you in with a good tip, and then change it afterwards. Fucker.
Mm-hmm. That's a problem on Instacart. There's a lot of customers who will bump a big tip on there, and because they have so many hours to change it after the delivery is made, they'll do that to lure drivers to take the delivery, and then they'll just drop the tip off of it after it's done. It's real shady.
Yeah,
So there is no one right way to do it.
No.
Someone's getting screwed. No matter what.
Almost invariably, the driver is getting screwed one way or another.
Yeah, and that's why I have to be careful about how I do my job, I don't get screwed.
No kidding. Damn. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to something else, because that's depressing the shit out of me now.
and it's all shop talk, too. I mean, I can't imagine everybody's too terribly interested in hearing about that.
Quarantine and coronavirus, those kinds of apps are useful, because I know personally, I don't want to, even just going carry out to a place and having to, deal with extra people. I'm cooking at home sounds better, but occasionally, I'm desperate for a pizza and having someone deliver it to me is nice. So,
for sure.
I mean, people are going to be like me that listen to this. We're like, okay, so if I'm going to have delivery...
If you can't leave your house or don't want to leave your house, and you want to make sure the guy or the gal that's delivering your food is not getting screwed over, I think your best option is Grubhub. Tip them well. You'll get a good level of service.
Nice.
I think.
Nice. So, as I mentioned earlier, I know you from the Final Fantasy Randomizer community. I'm kind of curious how you got into that game.
I don't remember how I found I found something somewhere that there was a Final Fantasy randomizer, that there was an actual tournament being held to compete on that randomizer format. This is 2017.
Okay, so right around the time of the first tournament then.
I first played the randomizer a week or two before the damn tournament started. Signed up for it. The second time I'd ever played the game was my first tournament match, and I played against somebody named Zarby, and I got waxed in my. It was a best of three, and I got waxed.
Yeah.
In my first match, because I tried to take a solo black belt through half of the seed, and I was probably two orbs in when he got done. Mm. And I in between that and my second match, my second game against him, I did a grind on practices. I figured out how to do this best, and I learned encounter manipulation, where the encounter table used to be fixed. Mm-hmm. It was just the vanilla game. So you could use a special trick right before going into the end dungeon and manipulate it in such a way that the fights that you get on the way down are more favorable than if you just left it up to chance.
That was necessary at the time because most of the encounters hadn't really been randomized and the unrunnable definitely hadn't because the first tournament was a very bare bones randomizer at the time. So a lot of the tricks from the vanilla game worked really well in that tournament.
Right. Yeah, the grind tiles were like you knew what enemy was going to show up on a certain trap tile. Mm-hmm. And it was nice for planning, but as far as your ability to adjust on the fly, it was pretty much all contingent on where you found things. Just mm-hmm. similar to now, but less was up to chance.
Yeah.
So I got better really quickly. but I really do wish I knew. I wish I remembered where I found the randomizer. Because I just don't know. It was in its primordial stages. We had like people like Edgeworth and Tristel and Jay Coper were around when I joined. The community was just starting to really catch traction. We had 31 entrants in the first tournament as opposed to now where we have like, I think it was 74 that signed up.
74 or 76 that were there for the day of,
Yeah, So, I mean, it's grown by leaps and bounds. And because I went from literal unknown to finishing in the top four, I got the chance to be in that bonus stream, and that's kind of where I made my name.
Was that the solo black belt, or was that first one solo thief?
That was actually... So the format is and was a single class. Your party was only allowed to be one class, and that was so everybody else took four thieves. I promised right before that went on that if I made the bonus stream, I would take one.
Well, you only need one.
That's right. Only need one to win. Hashtag. and I did, and lo and behold, 8 hours and 35 minutes later, I finished.
That's a fucking marathon.
It was a marathon. We went through, I think, three teams of commentators. Yeah. Kiten619, to his credit, was there the whole time. We had people like Tara Lynn, who's no longer in the community. Edgeworth was there for a while. Zara was in there for a while. I think Trenton was in there. Like a lot of people who are no longer with the community or are kind of on the outside of it. And a few people who are still in it were involved in that. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So.
And then you've participated in every bonus stream since because of you only need one mentality.
That's it. Yeah. I am now a gimmick for the end of every tournament. So whatever the people vote on as being the single class for this bonus stream, I will be running one character of that class.
You're the fucking touchscreen and 3D effects of the Final Fantasy Randomizer's DS.
Something like that. We call that I'm the bells and the whistles, yes.
But, I mean, you're known for it, and I have to admit, when I raced you that one time with Solo Black Belt and that Hellseed, man, you fucking crushed it.
You do something enough times, if you don't get good at it, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, no, there's no doubting your ability with that, because you made way more progress than I did before your computer crapped out during that run.
That was sad.
It was sad. I want to see you finish it. I was going to play right till the end with you and then forfeit immediately afterwards, but yeah.
Yeah, my laptop forfeited before I had a chance to. That was unfortunate.
Someone had to.
Mm-hmm.
So, but were you a Final Fantasy fan of the NES or the series or whatever before you joined up with the randomizer?
Absolutely, yeah. NES version is essentially what I did. What in 2014, the one of the first things I ever did on Twitch was run the solo cycle, so all six characters solo, unpromoted. So I started with Black Belt, then I did Fighter, and I went the Red Mage, White Mage, Black Mage, Thief. And I ran all six of them.
So you running solo wasn't just like a weird gimmick you came up with on the fly. You'd done it before.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to bring that to the randomizer. Mm-hmm. And you know, running the solo Thief back in 2014 was something that I was really proud to have accomplished.
Yeah, because
And then I got, you know,
Thieves the vanilla game are awful.
They're terrible. Well, even in the randomizer before the fixes came on, they were not a favorable class to take. You could run, and you could promote to ninja, and you had better equipment to equip, but weapon fixes weren't on yet, I don't think. So Katana, I don't think, was hitting with crits.
Not 2017. Weapon fixes came around in 2018, because I remember during the tournament there was some like debate back and forth about whether or not they ruined the game for the second tournament, and some of the flag sets for that tournament had them off, others had it on. It was kind of a clusterfuck.
Yeah, a bit of one, yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to remember how it worked out. When I did the bonus stream, I think we might have applied the weapon fixes, because I think I ended up taking a Vorpal.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the katana for some odd reason. Mm. I didn't have either of the two in the game, and I don't know why. I don't know what the hell happened, but I switched between Masa and Vorpal, and I think I ended up beating the Tiamat 2 from Hell with a Vorpal.
Oh, yeah. I loved that video with the Tiamat 2 from Hell. That was such an awful gatekeeper boss. Like I don't even think we... Well, that was the event where they decided they needed to gimp down how bad the... nerf the evade, because that was what, like a max evade Tiamat that couldn't be hit for anything?
Yeah, I just pulled it up about 20 minutes ago and ran it back into FF Hackster. The agility on it was 240, which was, at the time, max evade.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't go that high now.
No.
No, we fixed it after that one, because that was wretched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was insane. So, we didn't have Lock or Lock 2 available to us, or we did, but it was the hit rate of it was just terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they've improved that, too. There's been a lot of, like, the game that we have now is Final Fantasy Randomizer might look like the NES game, has a veneer of it, but it plays... Like, it doesn't really play like the NES game much anymore.
No. It's an entirely different beast. Mm. And especially when you add in things like Enemizer and Spellcrafter, things like open progression, open extended progression, where you can, you know, connect different parts of the world that otherwise weren't connected. Mm-hmm. It's changed a lot of how the game can be played or is played.
Yeah, it's not even really similar to like the Game Boy or PSP versions at this point. It has it's definitely its own beast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a lot of fun, too. Like, we're getting a lot of people because of the variety and because of a lot of the energy of the people around it who are, you know, jumping in and doing comms, people who are playing it and are really animated in Discord, and people who are open to bringing new people in the community and helping them learn. Like, that's a big draw for this game, is we have people who want to help and want to be ambassadors for this game. And that's not something you have in a lot of communities. A lot of games don't have that.
Well, a lot of the games, I'm not going to name any particular ones, but it's like to be competitive in there, you have to really learn all the different tricks and everything else. Like, and again, I'm not calling out any communities when I say this, but it's like if you want to be really good at the Mega Man 2 randomizer, you have to learn the zips. You want to be good at the Zelda 1 randomizer, you have to learn the screen scrolls. So that's
right, exactly.
And that's the minimum bar. If you can't do those, you can't even really play at the competitive level at all. At least with the randomizer, like even if you ignore the duckling the newbie program we have, the minimum bar for Final Fantasy Randomizer is lower to get into, because there's like there aren't really any major glitches in the game, so it's all just like how you play.
Yeah, I mean, the only glitches I can think of are, like, the warp glitch in Ice Cave, where you can warp up and check the chest without having to go all the way through again.
Yeah.
But that's one of the very few things.
And that's not even really a glitch. That's just the programmer not expecting you to be able to use that spell at that time, which the randomizer, of course, opens. And,
correct.
I mean, a lot of that is just little tricks that you can tell a duck, and after a time or two, they'll remember and be like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. It's not like you got to go, like, take two steps over, then take a step back and line yourself perfectly on this pixel so you can wrap around the screen. Like, the guys that can...
Like Z1, right?
Yeah, the Z1 screen scroll. I'm like, you guys can do that consistently every time, and that's fucking frightening.
Yeah, and again, it comes down to the more times you do something, if you're not good at it after a number of times, then there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Like the 10,000... You know, doing something 10,000 times to become an expert at it. I don't know that many people have done 10,000 reps of screen scrolling, but, you know, probably damn near.
So some of them, yeah. The guys that grind out the world records in classic Zelda, I'm sure they have at this point done that many screen scrolls.
For sure, yeah. You just have a muscle memory about it. You have an eye for it, and you just do it. It's like any other skill. It's like, you know, juggling or balancing on a high wire or anything like that. You do it enough times and it just becomes second nature.
Yeah. So you were talking about doing like solo runs of the various classes in Final Fantasy. Was that a game you grew up with?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I had it when it came out and it intrigued me. I had so much fun with it. Just like everybody else who played it back in the day, I was betrayed by the Nintendo Power Guide that had all these terrible hints in it and terrible tips for doing things like, oh yeah, you can equip this and it'll do that. And, you know, fight ogres and creeps for gold. Like, that's not helpful. That's not.
I'll be frank. I got the Nintendo Power package that had like a little laminated card and the tiny booklet that came with it that guided you through the whole game. And even back then, I'm sitting there going, this is too much like an instruction booklet. I'm just going to figure this shit out on my own.
Sure. And that was probably, and you were probably better off for it.
Yeah. Well, the guide doesn't tell you to do things like say screw it to Volcano and go hit Ice Cave instead for the floater and then just go class promote so you get those levels faster. Like,
right.
The game is very linear in some places and then surprisingly not in others.
Yeah, it really opens it. Like once you get Canoe and then the floater, then the, you know, the airship, it really turns into let's do things however you want to do them.
Yeah, you can start fucking off in different directions and just exploring the world at your leisure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is fun. It makes it a lot easier in certain places, a lot harder in others.
Yeah. So what other games did you play growing up? I'm kind of curious now.
Dragon Warrior series was a big one for me. The Final Fantasies on Super Nintendo, 2 and 3, or you know, 4 and 6.
4 and 6, yeah.
7, 8, 9, X was kind of where I started to fall away. I played X 2 and was like, okay, we're done here.
That was it. You didn't like the pretty princessing?
Wasn't a fan. I mean, I'll say this, the game mechanics themselves are solid, they're smooth, but it's just not a fun game. I don't like the story. I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, well, that was at that point where Square and Enix had merged together, and I kind of feel like that's a point where the company fell off.
Yep. Yeah. It does good things sometimes, and it does weird things others. I mean, Kingdom Hearts is one of those things that divides a lot of people, too. Some people are just in love with that series. And other people are like, Kingdom Hearts is garbage. And I'm in between on that. I just first played it for the first time about last month.
Yeah.
I have recency bias, but I like the story. I don't like the character design. I do like some of the game mechanics, but I don't like controls.
Yeah.
And there's so many things I do like, and there's so many things I hate.
I haven't tried the remakes, but it does very much play like a PS2-style action-adventure RPG for all the benefits and flaws that implies.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I played through up to, like, the Tarzan level or something of that game, and it was interesting enough, but it wasn't like it super hooked me, I guess is the best way.
No, Tarzan level, like, the Tarzan world is kind of where I started to get a little bit of fatigue story-wise. Mm. Like, oh, God, this is just, this is going to get better. And it did. To its credit, it did. Mm-hmm. But I'm at a point now, I haven't finished the game. I'm waiting. I have one fight in the arena left to do, and I have the time trial, the last time trial in the arena to do before I beat the game, and I refuse to beat it before I do those two things. And I'm like, to get myself motivated to go sit down and do those, like, those are headache inducing things.
Pulling teeth.
It's just like literally headache inducing. I sit down and I try to fight I don't want to, well, fuck it. It's a 20 something year old game.
Yeah.
The Sephiroth fight, which is the final bonus fight that you can fight in the arena. It's so, it sucks. and I don't want to go grind more. I'm already like level 70 something, which should be enough to do something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go grind more levels, but there's these spammy attacks where he brings you down to one hit point, and then if you don't use an elixir fast enough, he just comes up and hits you. They like tap you on the shoulder and you're dead. And if your controls don't respond quickly enough, you die. And that's a problem I've got with the game.
Yeah, that's very much a part of that era of that. Like, even Chrono Trigger back on the Super Nintendo had those spammy drop you to one hit point attacks and then you have to react quickly. But, you know, at least in that one, you could, like, set your menus to wait and not worry about it. And an action RPG like that is totally different.
Right. That's one thing I liked about Chrono Trigger is that you had options and you weren't doomed by your own controls if your controls were, you know, not responding properly.
Yeah.
And you also had three characters during all those fights, as opposed to, you know, the Sephiroth fights a one-on-one.
Ugh.
And you're just, you know, well, all right, I'm down to one HP. I hope I'm far enough away. Nope.
Yep.
Dead. Start over. That five minutes of progress you got in that fight, gone. Do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimate bosses like that irritate the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just not a good time.
Yeah. So you mentioned Dragon Warrior. Have you checked out the Dragon Warrior randomizer at all?
I've checked it out. I haven't played it. I've watched several races of it. It seems like Cartography 101, you know, meets RNG 101, meets menuing 101. It's all the things I hate about gaming rolled into one. It's fun to watch, but God, I don't want to play that. Yeah. I'm not interested in you know, drawing a map like Nes Cardinality does, or...
I don't, you know, like, you know, I watch that, and I kind of feel like the map making is maybe overkill. Like, I've watched enough of that game where it's mm-hmm. the point where I sit there thinking, you know what, if I played this a little more, I could probably just mentally map what's going on in this. Because the map's, like, the world seems big, but it's really not that complicated. There's only, what, like, 6 fucking towns and 4 dungeons or something?
It's
like,
something to that degree.
Yeah.
But I mean, to Nes Cardinality's credit, I mean, if he's doing it and he's, like, the number one player, or at least number two player in that whole community, I can't question the strategy.
I mean, if it works for him, it works for him. I just feel like mm-hmm. if I was to do it, I'd be like, okay, maybe this works, but I can't fucking bring myself to do it.
No, it's not my jam. And then, you know, and menuing, you know, like I said, I've got psoriatic arthritis and it affects all of my joints. So there are times when my joints just don't want to cooperate. My hands will lock up. So like menuing through heal potions and FFR, sometimes it just doesn't go the way I want it to.
Yeah.
If my whole game is dependent upon being able to menu through the magic menu, menu through the fights, it's just, Yeah, because it has to be pinpoint precise. I watch the Dragon Lord fights at the high levels, and it's like, if you cast Heal More instead of Hurt More, or vice versa, at the wrong time, that's your ass.
Yep, you're dead, and you're back to the start again, because that is an unforgiving battle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. It's unforgiving even if you have the levels, let alone if you don't.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, that is Math 101 right there for Dragon Warrior mm-hmm. right there. You know the hard numbers you have to do, and if you don't have them, you're not even going to make it through the end of the game.
Right, yeah, you have to be, I think, at least level 18 or something like that.
Depends.
It's in that neighborhood.
With the way the randomizer works now, and depending on if you're in chaos mode or what, it's really dependent upon how much health and strength and defense you have.
Sure. Yeah, I haven't watched it recently, so I'm assuming that's,
they keep tweaking stuff. Yeah. It's still Dragon Warrior through and through, one way or another. Like, some of the other members of our community love that fucking game, and I'm like, it's fun. I don't know mm-hmm. if I could ever get into it.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
It's fun.
But, I don't need that kind of pressure. Like, you can screw up a number of times in FFR and still win a race.
Yeah. But or at least make it can. Close. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The learning curve and the difficulty curve of the game, it's a barrier to entry that's far lower than other games, like you're saying, like Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
Some people like that. Some people think it's stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to name names of people who are like kind of ancillary to the community who just think that, you know, randomizers in and of themselves, like RPG randomizers, JRPGs, are not a skill-based thing. Because it's just too much variance. There's too much RNG, and it's not really indicative of anything. And then there's other people who think that that's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think there is a certain level of skill in them. I mean, as someone who just played in the tournament and then got knocked out, I can verify that while there's a certain amount of RNG to it, there is a minimum skill level required. Because you can find people that just are not going to be able to play with the big boys no matter what. So
right.
That raw skill is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a raw skill. There's a game knowledge thing. Like, you can have somebody who's really good with game knowledge and just can't play the game well, or doesn't want to play the game in a fast way.
Yeah,
like you take somebody like Meridian, who just doesn't want to. Like, he's not into running fast the whole way through. He wants to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm similar. I like a challenge, so I don't want those sub hour jet seeds. I want to find a way to get through hell. And that's why, like, so my race on Saturday is going to be Tarnan and myself running a fighter, thief, none. That's what we've agreed upon, and that's what I'm into.
Yeah, that's like, amazing.
Let's make things tough. Let's see how tough we really are.
Well, Tarnan loves to run those kinds of like hell seeds too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a marriage made in heaven, really. Yeah, we were both hoping to draw each other, and we did. It was great.
Eventually, right near the end. It's perfect.
Exactly.
So with the tournament, what is your record currently?
I'm 4-1. We're both 4-1. So the winner goes to brackets, the loser goes to the play-in race. So it's a big stakes game.
It really is. All of that riding on the shoulders of just two characters.
Yep. I wouldn't have it any other way. Best chance I've got. I would rather run a fighter thief against Tarnan than run a full party against Shadowwalker or Cheezinator. Because I'm not fast. I'm just good at planning. I'm good at thinking my way through things that are tougher than you're used to.
Yeah.
And I'm persistent as hell. So it just pays off.
Yeah. So what are your hopes? I mean, like, are you looking forward to brackets? Are you expecting to do well in there?
Yeah, I am. The strength that I've got is when I have control over the party, when I have control over my opponent's party, I tend to do better. I don't know. I've never been in a match that I can remember where we've done a draft or an agreed upon party ahead of time where I've lost.
Okay.
I can't think of a time that I did.
Okay.
So if I can make it to the brackets, I feel pretty good about my odds. Like, I'm not afraid of anybody in this community when it's a draft.
Okay.
I'm not afraid of Crab Kicks. I'm not afraid of Shadow Walker. I'm not afraid of Cheezinator, Thunder. I love them all, and they kick my ass in a straight-up race. 99 times out of 100, I'm not delusional about that.
Okay.
But make this a draft where we're forcing each other to work with limited magic or fewer characters or, you know, what have you, some kind of limitation that's going to throw you off your game. I'm going to be better prepared to handle that than, maybe not Crab Cakes, but just about anybody else. Because I'm used to doing that. That's what I do regularly. They speed run. I handicap myself, so I'm ready for that, and I perform well like that.
It does. It will be interesting to see who. Like, I mean, the whole of brackets has been thrown off. When I did my interviews with Gouda and Gregly back in the back 6 weeks ago, I guess at this point, we were expecting, you know, Crab Cakes and Spell Zap to glide on through, and they're both what, sitting at like 3 each, and they have to win their next one if they don't want to go to the LCQ.
That's correct. Yep, they both have to win to get to 4-2.
Yeah, which is just absolutely shocking. I don't think anyone expected like this whole tournament to play out the way it has.
No, a lot of the people who are 4-2, 3-2, or yeah, who finished 4-2, who are 3-2 now, or even somebody like Burt Reynolds, who I think he's at 2-3. Like, who saw this coming?
No, we all expected Burt to be a dark horse and be like the guy that would challenge Spell Zap or Crab Cakes for the title.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And Ale as well. Like, there's names like that where you really expected this person to like just crush it. And then you got people like Elastoid, myself. Groggy Dog is a good player, but I didn't expect Groggy Dog to go 5-1.
I was going to mention him, that he came up just a few months ago in our last Duckling Derby, our beginner program that ends with a tournament. And I mean, he won that one, but sure. I don't think anyone would have bet that the Duckling Supreme would go 5-1 in like the next tournament we had.
No. Absolutely not. And you know, to my own credit, I don't think anybody predicted I would go 4-1. I didn't. But I'm at a point now where I wouldn't bet against me. Things are just starting to roll my way, and you know, I'm gonna ride that as far as I can.
If you do happen to end up in the play-in race, what's your plan?
When?
Well, yeah, but I mean for the race itself.
This is my traditional party: black belt, thief, black, white.
Okay.
And just if I play a middling game, all I have to do is finish 8th out of 17 people. That seems easy enough to me. Like, as long as I don't fall on my face.
No, you've got the skill level for that. That's easy. I mean, yeah, with a black belt and a black or a white backing them up, you should be able to ruffle stomp through Topher pretty well.
That's the theory. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not scared. I want to avoid, but I do want to avoid that race.
Yeah,
I want to bypass the whole damn thing. I want to beat Tarnan on Saturday, bypass that, and draw my opponent who came out of that race and beat them and get back to the Final Four where I belong, where I was, 3 years ago.
I mean, there was an easier way to bypass that race. You just had to lose 4 times like I did.
Bypass that and then bypass brackets and then, bypass the whole
bypass everything. It's so much less stressful, let me tell you.
I can imagine it is. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm on pins and needles for this race.
I've been
practicing Fighter Thief Seeds, Fighter Thief None on this chaos set. And I gotta tell you, these are not friendly flags for that party.
No, they're not friendly flags at all. I don't know if you caught my race that happened mm-hmm. yesterday, and that was pretty hellish.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was very hellish.
Yeah. As I was commenting to some people, like, off the air afterwards, by about the 120 mark when I got bounced out of Ice Cave again, I was just like, yeah, I'm on tilt. I can feel it. I'm just tilted at this point. And then it never let go.
No. Tilt is a hard thing to come off of. When you're tilted, it's... You can't get inside your own head too much. Like, if the game's kicking you in the dick, you got to put on a cup and push through it.
Yeah. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year, huh?
Next year. So, branching out further afield, we've talked video games, we've talked your job. I'm kind of curious what else it is that you do. What are your hobbies or other things that interest you?
I'm looking to turn this room into a more sound-friendly room and start doing some voiceover work. Start getting myself some jobs doing that. And voice acting as well. And I am going to be working on a song with LFB and those guys for some of the music from Final Fantasy. And I'm going to put lyrics and vocals down for that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I've written lyrics for half of one of the songs we're going to do. So I'm looking forward to putting that actually... putting that down on wax, as it were. be the first time in a long time I've recorded myself singing, so it'll be good.
That'll be interesting. Sure. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
So is music one of your interests then?
Oh, most definitely. I love music. I can't play any instrument proficiently except for sing. I've kind of taught myself how to do that.
I mean,
since I was a kid.
I've been in enough bands to identify the fact that there are a lot of people who are musically inclined who don't want to sing, so that's worth something.
Yeah, I can tool around on a guitar just, by ear. I'm not great by any stretch. I can't play chords worth a damn, but like I understand music. There's just something in me that gets how it works, that gets harmonics, that gets pitch, gets key. I just understand these things inherently, and it makes it easy for me to sing.
And being able to write lyrics is a talent in and of itself.
I was a writing major in college, so
there you go. Yeah,
got that going for me.
Yeah, I have my own little band that I've been tooling around with, and we're all sitting there going, all we do is cover songs, and none of us want to write lyrics because none of us can. So
that's if you don't care, then keep doing what you're doing and enjoy what you're doing.
We all feel like we need to, but like none of us are at your talent level. We're sitting there going, can we actually do this? No.
Get somebody to write your lyrics for you. That's what you need to do is get somebody to write your lyrics. Let them know what you're going for and mm-hmm. let them do it. Like Elton John had Bernie Taupin writing his songs. Like Elton John didn't write his own lyrics and he wrote some amazing, he played some amazing music.
That's fair.
So yeah, you can do that. You can go that route. There's no shame in that. play to your strengths.
And then, I mean, one other factoid I want to touch on, because I know it's something you've mentioned before, and mm-hmm. you are vegan.
I am.
Yes.
I am. Since 2013.
What led to that?
Being vegetarian for 10 years prior, that 2003 is when I went vegetarian. Prior to that, for about 6 months before I went full vegetarian, I had eaten pretty much Burger King double whoppers on a daily basis.
Uh-huh.
I was just plowing through shitty fast food meat, and I got sick. And I was like, you know what? I think this meat is just not good for me. I'm going to try to cut this out. I'm just going to stick with chicken and fish. I haven't eaten pork since I was, I think, 12 years old or so, which has been 1992.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a fan of it. Never have been. People rant and rave about bacon. I'm like, I don't get the hype. I really don't. But I decided to give it a shot and see if I could get by without beef. And I was like, yeah, this is not a big deal. Like, it's harder to find food that doesn't have meat in it, that doesn't have beef in it, but no big deal. Been doing that with pork for years. And then I'm like, you know what? Let's push this further. Let's just try eating only seafood. So I got rid of poultry. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm handling this. Let's try seafood too. Let's see if I can do vegetarian. And once I cut seafood out, I tried vegetarian and I saw all the things that I could still eat. I figured, let's see how long I can ride this out. And that managed to be 10 years. And I'm like, I've done this. Like, this can be done. I'm going to try vegan. I'm going to give up sour cream. I'm going to give up ice cream. I'm going to give up butter, give up regular pizza, all these things that I love, and just see if I can live without. And I did. And I've been doing it for 7 years. So I help people who want to learn more about it, but I don't push it on anybody because it's the choice that I made. Mm-hmm. And it's not for everyone. I would love it if it was, but you know, people have to decide that they're ready for something like that, or they're ready to open their mind to something like that before they're ready to listen to you. So this PETA shit, this, you know, beating you over the head with morality plays, it doesn't work. People don't respond to that. They don't like that. They don't like being talked down to. So I don't do it. It's fucking obnoxious. I wouldn't want anybody doing it to me. So I don't do it to anybody else. Same thing with smoking or drinking. I don't do those either. That's my life. Those are my choices. If you want to know how I do it, I'll talk to you. I'm not going to talk down to you. And that's, I think more people need to realize that people are just like them. And if you're going to talk to somebody about something you're passionate about, understand that they're probably not the same kind of passionate that you are, or they might be the complete opposite. So you need to be conscientious of that. You need to be empathetic with them and understand they're coming from a totally different place from you and approach them that way. Let them open up the possibility before you go diving in.
That is fair.
Yep.
Well, very informative.
When I get going, man. I went on a rant about not going on rants. And
Let me set down my soapbox about soapboxes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've been going on about close to 45 minutes at this point, so I don't want to take up your entire evening and, you know, earn the wrath of your girlfriend at this point.
She does not mind. It's okay. I've got at least another 15 minutes of leeway as far as that's concerned. It's up to you.
Well, you got anything else you want to talk about?
I don't know. I guess I don't know a whole hell of a lot about you and you know where you measure up versus me, like what you're all about, what your passions are. Like if you've got a band, that's clearly one thing. But what else you got?
I mean,
what else?
If you go and search around about me online or through the mm-hmm. Asteroid G group that we're both a part of, because you know mm-hmm. that's the group name I use right now. Sure. Role playing games. I am super deep into Castlevania. That is. Like, I wish I was better at those games so I could play in the randomizers for them, because
uh-huh.
I love those. I love the ambiance of those games. I love the universal monsters. I love everything about the Castlevania series, and
true.
I am wretched at them.
It takes a certain type of player. It's like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. It takes a certain type of player to be good at that kind of game.
Yeah. No, it's like with the Contra games. Castlevania's the same way. If I'm going to make it through one of them, I basically have to, like, save state scum my way through, because those early games will kill me. Oh my god.
Yeah, things like that. I think Castlevania is about the jumping. It's about timing. It's about knowing that you can't adjust things midair in the early games.
It's a delicate balance, a dance, really. If you watch the guys that are good at the game, it's knowing where the enemies are spawning in from, having the level layouts memorized. I mean, it is a skill all on its own to be good enough to even make it through the game without even trying to do it fast.
Right.
Yeah.
Ninja Gaiden's a similar thing, too.
Oh my god, the people that play Ninja Gaiden are scary good. And I'm sitting there going, I think I made it through the first level once.
I'm far better at Ninja Gaiden than I am at Castlevania, but I like them both. They're both fun, and I haven't played either of them in a while.
I mean, if you go and look at the basic mechanics of them, sure, you're a little more maneuverable in Ninja Gaiden, and you do have the wall base, but they do both come from a similar place of, like, grueling platforming with, like, your base weapon and your up B maneuvers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the kick your dick in and make you pay for it type of game.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's great. It's a test. Like Batman. It's a test of how good are you?
And
it's not battle to its heart.
Yeah, they're all fantastic to watch. Mm-hmm. Playing them, that's not for me whatsoever.
they're well-made games.
They are. Yeah. They really are. It's the later Castlevanias that I can actually get through. Not even just the Metroidvanias, but like Castlevania 4, which is basically Castlevania Easy Mode.
Yes, that's what it is. Whip in any direction, that's cool.
Oh, I love it. Love it so much. But I mean, that was just such a well-made game, just even from the perspective of like the art design and the music. It's like, it's almost a Super Nintendo tech demo, but it's done so well.
Yeah, it is. It's a fantastic game. It's a lot of people's favorite.
Mm-hmm. Mine included. But I mean, then of course, there's a clear split in the series from when like the Metroidvania stuff gets inserted, and then it becomes a different genre entirely.
It does, and I like it. I think it's cool, and it's a different atmosphere, but at the same time, it's familiar.
Well, it still has, there's still a certain Castlevania-ness to it, and I think it shows a similar DNA, even though they're very different genres, between the early Castlevania games and the early Metroid games, wherein, you know, it's the constant enemies, the knowing where you're going, knowing how to jump and how to time things, and anticipating what your foes are going to do. That's a skill that carries across.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, being able to anticipate and having a deep knowledge of a game is very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And the Metroidvania ones, they use that DNA in a different respect, just to get a little closer to Metroid. It's other games that try to ape that style that don't always succeed as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's games like Rogue Legacy that are pretty cool about that, but it's also a different type of game itself.
Yes. But that is a fun game. I loved my time in that game. It was a blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Axiom Verge is another, it's like a love letter to Metroid. And
it is.
That's
one of those ones that I like to watch again, but man, I gotta tell you, I'm actually really shit at the original Metroids. I am the person that can load up Super Metroid. Everyone's like, oh, this one's so good and it's well designed. And they're like, I got lost trying to figure out where Samus's ship was. So...
Just keep going up and toward the middle and you'll get there. Eventually.
I'm terrible at those games.
But they're so fun.
They're fun to watch. And that's another one of those ones where it's like the technical skill involved in those is just amazing.
Yeah. The Super Metroid racers are out of this world. The mechanical skill you have to do those games is just amazing.
But it's also interesting to me about Metroid is like Super Metroid specifically is the amount of stuff that's built into that game that you're never told about, like the X factors and everything, and don't even know is there, but like clearly the designers put them in as just this Easter egg for you to discover.
Right. Yeah, it's such a, like, it's a 10 out of 10 game.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fluid. It's so well balanced. The controls are phenomenal. There's so much fun stuff to discover. The difficulty is fair.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah,
it's so amazing. It's such a perfect game.
Yeah, and it's interesting how balanced it is in comparison to some of the other ones. Like Metroid and Metroid 2 are like, well, Metroid 2 is very linear, but both of those are much more difficult. And while Fusion is, I'd say, probably as balanced as Super Metroid in some respects, it's also way more linear and hand-holdy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not something I'm into. I don't like linear as much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we play Final Fantasy Randomizer, try and limit the amount of linearity we have to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. You try to find linearity.
Yeah.
You try to create it. You don't. It doesn't exist before you. You try to form a linear path through this game by guessing.
What are you telling me, Rando? Where do you want me to go? And it's just Lassie barking because it's found, like, some bug or something. It doesn't give a shit about Timmy in the well at all.
Here, take this rod. Go to Earth. Okay, no.
How did you not know we were supposed to go to Marsh Cave the whole time? Well, because I didn't want to fucking go there. That's why.
Because clearly only idiots do that. I'm an early Earth guy. I'm an Earth 1 and maybe 2 kind of guy, because I've pulled so many things out of Earth 1 and Earth 2 that I just, if it calls to me, I go.
I like the Earth play but if I have the rod, or I like the Earth play if the shuffled encounter tiles in the randomizer are on, such you get things like the two different tiles in the Hall of Giants and the elemental tiles. If those have different things on them that might be worthwhile, Earth is a no-brainer, at least check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always check those three tiles and see, oh, we got three eyes. Oh, we've got, you know, Gurmaduses. We've got
And you're power. There. You're there anyway. You may as well check the 5 or 6 treasure chests that are on that floor.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've pulled key item out of there. A Masa, ribbon, something. Come on.
Useful. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the game is like, no one comes here. I'm going to weight these treasure chests better. Even though it totally doesn't. It just feels that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Like High Spirits and I had a race 2 weeks ago, and he and I both went to Earth early and got, I think it was our canoe. And if either of us doesn't make that check, we fall way behind the other one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
no,
it just happens so often.
The race I had yesterday with Allie, with the glare werewolves from hell that just constantly hounded both of us.
pun intended.
It had Chime pass Rod, and Chime was basically the only way to unlock most of that seed. If you didn't get Chime from Earth, you weren't finishing the game, and trying to get to it was hell, and it felt like that was a feels bad moment, because I was there an hour beforehand trying to get through. It was like one step away from the Rod plate when I got glared out by werewolves.
And ouch. Like,
yeah. Oh, as I said, the tilt was real. But if I'd managed to get those couple extra steps, I probably would have won that match. And you're just sitting there going, oh. Goddamn randomizer.
Yeah, goddamn randomizer. What are you doing? Every fucking time. It's not always like this, but it's always this bad.
Yeah, no. That's what we tell everyone. It's not always this bad. And then secretly in your head we're hearing, well, it is kind of always this bad.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good right there, sir. That was about an hour, and I like should release you back to your girlfriend.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's
is a pleasure. Haven't had a chance to talk to you in depth in ever. So ever. That was really cool.
It's been an absolute joy to have you on the show, good sir. I look forward to having you back at some point.
Sounds good. I'll be around.
Yeah, if we can get you and Will Cleosis in together, do Team Willuminati on the mic.
That's entirely real possibility. It is an entirely real possibility that can happen.
This has been a special presentation of Not So Life from Asteroid G. I'm Mike Finkelstein in here with Will Bloodworth, and I want to thank you for being on the show, and then we will see you guys next time.